the U.S. seizure of nearly $9 billion in Afghan assets and cuts in global aid has been one of their main struggles. Afghans lived through a harsh winter with little food. Based on a poll by Gallup Institute, nearly all Afghans rated their lives as poorly enough to be considered suffering. Meanwhile, some neighboring countries and international bodies rushed aid to the country.
We witnessed that after the Taliban takeover, people sold their children and body organs to put food on the table. I personally lost my job and have been unemployed for months. Millions of others were unable to make ends meet due to food and cash scarcity. I urge the U.S. and the international community to release frozen Afghan funds and let the flow of aid. Afghans can no longer bear the ongoing miseries.
The security situation in the meantime has been far better than in the past two decades. That's to say, people experience less violence and conflict this year. However, the occasional attacks by the Daesh terrorist group continue to haunt the community.
Previously, our people were living with the U.S. bombardments on their territories. Under the pretext of the war against terror, the U.S. pushed terror in Afghanistan for 20 years and violated all rights of Afghans. Since the Taliban have come to power, our country has been more secure and peaceful. I hope the Taliban succeed in cracking down on Daesh terrorist group and tightening security for all.
The Taliban, on the other hand, failed to gain international recognition. Afghans and the global community have criticized the Taliban for not forming an all-inclusive government.
This week marks the one-year anniversary of the Taliban takeover. To date, the Taliban have been unable to form a government representing all walks of Afghan society and protect their rights. In Afghanistan's history, no government has been successful without securing national legitimacy and being inclusive. The Taliban should learn from the past, seek fair engagement with Afghans, and be flexible against the global community.
All things considered, international bodies and rights groups continue to engage with the de facto Taliban to advocate for the rights of Afghans and address their needs. They also have been calling on the Taliban to open girls' school as soon as possible. 1 year into the Taliban government, Afghans are calling on the international community to help the country's economy and force the U.S. to release its frozen assets. At the same time, they say the new government should engage more in diplomacy with other countries to improve the situation in Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
As Israel's systematic attacks on Gaza and Al-Quds persist, another war continues to rage on in Europe. The battle pits pro-Palestine activists pushing a global anti-Israel boycott campaign versus local authorities who back ties with Israel. Founded in 2005, Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions, also known as BDS, is a Palestinian-led movement promoting economic sanctions on Israel. Due to the movement's popularity, Tel Aviv has lobbied European lawmakers to criminalize the group and its activities. France, Germany and Britain are key battlegrounds, but lesser known is the struggles of the BDS in Austria. Speaking to local members, a crackdown on BDS activism remains ongoing.
It started in 2018 when, the local city government of Vienna, they implemented city resolutions, for example, against the BDS movement, where they say all local institutions and governmental institutions are not allowed anymore to support the movement, so which means all public places, they are restricted for us. All these restrictions against the BDS movement in Austria, in Europe and worldwide, I think it's a reaction from the Zionist movement and from the Zionist lobby, because BDS is getting stronger and stronger.
The Vienna city government are currently suing a BDS Austria representative over a Facebook post showing an image plastered over an official city poster. Elsewhere, support for the BDS can get you labelled anti-Semitic due to Austria adopting the controversial IHRA definition on anti-Semitism.
European authorities are introducing new legislation which aims to stop the activities of the peaceful boycott campaign. But policing people's desires not to invest in the Israeli regime is proving a near impossible task. Speaking to representatives of the BDS here in Vienna, they say that the response is an inevitable backlash to the group's success in undermining and damaging Israel's reputation across the continent. Robert Carter, Vienna. We'll be right back.
Turkey's Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu says he had a side talk with Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad on the sidelines of the Non-Aligned Movement Summit in October last year. The Turkish minister added he suggested a reconciliation to take a place between the Syrian government and the opposition, noting that without such a step, Syria will continue to face a crisis. Cavusoglu said that the EU and the international community would support a ceasefire in the war-torn country, and that no country would help in Syria's rebuilding process if a ceasefire is not achieved.
To prevent the division of Syria, there must be a strong administration in Syria. The will that can dominate every corner of its lands can only be achieved through unity and solidarity. We need to bring the opposition and government together for reconciliation. There will be no permanent peace otherwise.
Some believe such a revelation is a signal indicating Turkey is preparing for its cross-border military operation in northern Syria. In recent weeks, the Turkish army has been sending reinforcements to northern Syria, near the town of Tel Rifat. The town is under the control of Kurdish YPG forces, a U.S.-backed militia that Turkey considers the armed wing of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, known as PKK.
I think the timing of this announcement comes as Turkey is preparing for a cross-border military operation to secure the border area and push back Kurdish forces. A reconciliation between the government and the opposition will not only bring peace to Syria, but also Turkey, a country that has been directly affected by the Syrian war from terrorist attacks to the refugee crisis.
Some analysts believe Turkey has long been serving its own agenda in Syria. For example, by supporting some opposition groups inside Syria who served Ankara's interest in securing its borders and pushing Kurdish forces back. It might be soon to say whether Ankara has changed its strategy in regards with Syria. What is clear for Turkey is that fighting or defeating the Kurdish militants cannot guarantee its security. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Gas bills in Italy will likely double in cost from October the 1st if gas prices continue to rise this way. The recent announcement by power regulator ARERA has gone utterly unnoticed, with the Italian media focusing on the electoral campaign about a month away from the September 25 national elections. A week ago, the outgoing Italian government unveiled a €17 billion aid package aimed at protecting families from surging energy costs and rising consumer prices. However, ARERA and some energy experts have warned that very little has been done so far to reduce energy consumption in the country.
Italy's highly critical energy situation has been downplayed by politicians and the media. On one side, there is confidence about the country achieving its target of reaching storage levels of 90%, while on the other side, the risk that Russia could altogether stop the flow of gas to Italy has been underplayed.
Gas is central to Italy's energy systems. The country even produces over 50% of its electricity from natural gas. Rome has cut its reliance on Russian gas imports to 25% from about 40% at the start of the year, a decision that has thrown the energy sector into uncertainty. Some analysts have predicted annual gas bills could reach an average of €1,800 next year, almost double the annual average of €950 recorded this year. Many Italians are simply bewildered about how they can find themselves in a position of not being able to heat or light their homes.
It's been this way forever. I used to be a unionist. I saw the crisis coming. This is how our country works. We don't have any sovereignty.
Nothing works in this country. We have forever been in the hands of a bunch of swindlers and criminals. Italy has no future.
The outgoing government is planning to offset its dependence on Russian gas by signing new deals with African and Eastern Mediterranean countries and building new regasification plants in a number of Italian sea towns, a move that has met with staunch opposition from local residents. Max Civili, Rome.
Rights groups have accused the Israeli regime of committing war crimes against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip during its 3-day onslaught against the territory.
On Friday, Israeli forces started launching wanton attacks on Gaza, killing and maiming hundreds of civilians, including women and children. The fighting stopped on Sunday through an Egypt-mediated ceasefire. But Palestinians now have to live with the devastating aftermath of Israeli attacks. According to Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights, the Israeli attacks on Palestinians were systematic and deliberate and fall under Israel's strategy of using disproportionate and excessive force against civilians.
Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights reiterates its strongest condemnation of Israel's gross and systematic violations of international law, particularly in cases of extrajudicial killings and attacks against civilians and civilian objects. Such violations amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity for which those responsible must be held accountable.
Five wars have been unleashed between Israel and Palestinian resistance groups in Gaza since 2008. The regime has been using U.S.-made warplanes and weapons to hit targets in the densely populated area.
The United States and Israel are both responsible for the bloodshed in Gaza. Israel was given the green light from the United States to carry out the brutal attacks on Gaza under the watchful eye of the international community. Israel and the United States are partners in crime against the Palestinian people.
Human rights organizations say, based on the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, it is more than clear that Israel has been committing war crimes during its attacks on Gaza.
The impunity Israel continues to enjoy and the absence of accountability encourage Israeli officials to continue perpetuating war crimes against Palestinians. As evidenced by its latest aggression on Gaza, Israel does not hesitate to engage in prohibited acts of killing, including direct targeting of civilians. The International Criminal Court must at least investigate these crimes.
For decades now, there has been no pressure on Israel to stop its violence against civilians. Despite repeated and desperate pleas from human rights groups, the international community has stayed silent about the regime's atrocities against Palestinians.
Despite Israel's grave violations of international law, Palestinians continue to suffer due to international apathy. Now, rights groups are demanding that Israeli war criminals be brought to justice. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
Tragedy, injustice and destruction prompted a group of London rights organizations to call an emergency demonstration in support of Palestine and Palestinians. The Israeli bombardment of Gaza was the worst it's been since the May 2021 war that killed 260 Palestinians and destroyed thousands of homes and businesses. This new assault cost the lives of at least 47 Palestinians. A third of the scores killed were children. For those attending the demonstration opposite Downing Street, the official residence of the British Prime Minister, they needed to be present to raise their voice against the injustice.
What we've witnessed over the last few days is very familiar, but no less horrific. Once again, Israel has been bombing the Palestinian people in Gaza, claiming a right to self-defense. There's a reality here that any form of violence that is used to enforce occupation, used to enforce apartheid, used to enforce settler colonialism is by definition illegitimate. It is the Palestinian people who have a right to defence and to protect themselves.
One of the main themes linking the speakers at this event is the fact that the Israeli aggression is only made possible by the tacit support of states like the British, and that Palestinian blood remains on British hands.
The UK has obligations under international humanitarian law and the Geneva Convention to look after the people who are occupied rather than stand with the oppressor, with the world's 21st century apartheid state. They must stop, they must support the Palestinians in real terms, not through words, two-state solution, which means absolutely nothing, but in sanctioning Israel, because that's the next thing that needs to happen.
Your policy on the Palestinians has to change. Justice has to prevail. And the way the hypocrisy, the way they do deal with the Palestinian issue and other issues like the Ukrainian issues, for example, is at least we can say a hypocritical way of dealing with it. Therefore, we are here today to raise our voice and tell them that this is not acceptable.
Though a ceasefire is supposed to be in force, commentators point out that this simply means Israel has moved its campaign of aggression to other parts of occupied Palestine, including Nablus, where there have already been casualties, raising the specter of an escalation resulting in further Palestinian blood being shed. Amina Taylor, London.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends, no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging. And to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household the good, the pure, and his household the good, the pure, and his companions the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it. And leave no grief unless thou takes it away. And leave no enemy. And leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
Out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Shooting attack in occupied outlets. At least 8 Israelis injured, some critically. The shooter turned himself in with his gun described as a lone assailant. The Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid warned that, quote, whoever harms Israeli citizens has nowhere to hide. This is while the Hamas resistance group branded the incident as heroic and said that it was a natural response to the occupations and Zionist settlers' daily crimes against our people. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at the Palestinians' resolve to fight for their land and for their identity and Israeli violations and how it has been weakened when it comes to its security in the face of this attack. First, let's get the latest from our correspondent, Mona Kandil, who joins us from occupied Ramallah. Mona, tell us about where things stand right now in terms of the numbers, in case some may not be aware of the incident that has happened, and how this is going down in, Al-Quds in particular, and of course, how Palestinians feel about it.
How the Palestinians feel about it? All the Palestinian powers, the Islamic and national powers, confirmed that this operation comes today in order to insist that the Palestinian people continue in the path of resistance and all the tools of the struggle, as Hamas movement has said, would be available for Palestinians to continue in the path of resisting the Israeli occupation. As you have mentioned, early Sunday, a Palestinian man shot at an Israeli bus. A bus was carrying Israeli settlers, and near the Western Wall, what we know as Palestinian and Muslims say the Ha'at al-Buraq, al-Buraq Wall, near the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Then he opened fire at vehicles at a parking lot. At least 8 or 9 Israelis, because some Israeli media were speaking about 8 Israeli settlers were wounded. Others spoke about 9 Israeli settlers were wounded. Anyhow, following this operation, the man succeeded to escape. And the Israeli soldiers were searching for him. They raided Silwan neighborhood and in Al-Quds. They arrested a number of Palestinians, at least 2 of his relatives and his mother. That's why he turned himself into the Israeli police with his weapon that he used to carry out this operation. Immediately, there was a trial for this Palestinian man. because he was a Al-Quds resident and he holds an Israeli ID because he lives in the areas occupied in 1948, or he's originally from the lands occupied in 1948, living in Al-Quds. The interrogation would continue. Would be keeping him in prison for 8 days for the interrogation to take place. We received from several Israeli media as well that this Palestinian man had spent at least 5 years behind Israeli bars, and he was released recently.
Very well. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Monica Ndil there from Occupied Ramallah.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Let me introduce the guests for this edition of The Spotlight. We have Mota Abu Musaba, a political activist who joins us from Gaza City. Also joining us, Syed Nim, professor of political science, who joins us from Birzeit University, who joins us from occupied Ramallah. Welcome to you both. I'll start with you, if I may, what Hamas has described as a heroic act, a natural response to the occupations and Zionist settlers' daily crimes against our people, our country, major Muslim and Christian sites, and constant desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. How do you view the incident that happened and the one who committed it? Okay, this question to you, Mota Abu Musaba.
Yes. First of all, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure to join you. I think it's a matter of fact that this act actually comes in the context of the normal response against the ongoing and the continuous Israeli crimes committed against the Palestinian people. Today, as you know, that the Palestinian people are paying the price of the international silence from their blood. Yesterday, the whole world has witnessed how the Israeli occupation forces waged the brutal aggression against the Palestinian people in Gaza, leaving more than 45 Palestinians dead, more than 15 out of them, 15 Palestinians were from children. And after that, the Israeli occupation turned to the West Bank to commit more brutal crimes and killed Brahim Nablusi. So the Israeli occupation forces insist on committing more and more crimes against the Palestinian people. Amid those crimes, I think it's the legitimate right for the Palestinian people to defend itself and to respond to those crimes. No one can deny the Palestinian people their right of self-defense and resist the Israeli occupation. And I think that if any people worldwide was in the place of the Palestinian people, I think they would retaliate the same way and resist the any kind of aggression or attacks. So it's the normal response for the ongoing and the continuous Israeli crimes committed against the Palestinian people. And the Palestinian people would never accept to be attacked and to be slaughtered in front of the whole world without having any response towards those crimes.
Well, you have the Israeli Prime Minister. I need to make his stance clear here as to what he has said. He said all those who wish us evil know that they will pay a price for any harming of civilians, in a statement that he made. Now, what would you say to him when, or an Israeli of any background who says, well, what happened today is not the way to go. This act is not something that they think is the right way to proceed. What response would you give them?
Yes, in fact, the Palestinian people are on the resistance side. The Palestinian people are on the reaction side, and the Palestinian people actually defend themselves against the Israeli occupation forces. And actually, no one of the Israeli settlers could be considered as a civilian. Those who came from all over the world to occupy the Palestinian land, and they know clearly that these lands belong mainly to the Palestinian people, and here is a Palestinian people who is living here and who has been living here since hundreds of decades. So we cannot accept that those settlers who came to occupy the Palestinian land to be considered as civilians. Anyone come to this land knowing that the Palestinian people are the original owners of this land, I think they are nothing more than occupiers, and they are settlers. So they should expect from the Palestinian people to resist that kind of occupation.
Sure. Let me bring in Saad Nem, who is with us now. Saad Nem, welcome. Looking at what has happened today, we've had Hamas make some statements on this. One I mentioned, another, Hamas said, our nation knows very well that resistance is the only way to safeguard the Palestinian land, to safeguard the holy places, and can inflict enormous cost on the invaders and thwart their plots. First of all, when Hamas makes a statement like that, you know, we are dealing with a world where many are not aware of what is actually happening on the ground. Although you would think at this point everyone should be aware of what's happening to the Palestinians and the violations that the Israeli regime incurs on them. So when Hamas makes a statement like that and talks about resistance, do you think that people understand what Hamas is saying? Because what happened today is one of the consequences of the occupation.
Yes, that's right. It's indeed, when we are talking about the Palestinian resistance and Palestinian, even you know, in this last incident, I think that it came a little bit even late. After what happened in Gaza and the assassination and the mini war that they waged against Gaza, and then the incursion on the Al-Aqsa Mosque with thousands and trying, you know, to raise the Israeli flag and chanting on Friday, and the killing of Nablusi in Nablus, the assassination of Nablusi also with his colleagues as well. All that definitely will be, there will be a kind of a reaction. Now, coming back to your question, why would Hamas would say, yes, we support this kind of resistance to the Palestinian people against the Israeli aggression, but the question is, why the people outside would see the statement of Hamas and they didn't see the actions of Israel in the last few days? And that's the issue. Now they are talking about the response of Hamas to an incident, but they didn't see the war on Gaza, they didn't see the incursions on the Aqsa Mosque, they didn't see also the killing in Nablus. So all that combined, it showed clearly how hypocrisy the world and we media in general, and also the international community, or what's so-called international community, which is quite obvious that they are having a double standard in dealing with issues such as the issues with Russia and Ukraine, or the issues with Iran, or issues with North, even Korea. It's totally different when it comes to what Israel is doing. They don't want to see, and I don't think that we do care anymore about it. They want to call us terrorists, call us terrorists. But we need to defend our people, and we need to make a statement here that our resistance is not only our right, but it's also our duty as Palestinians to resist this occupation. It's not normal, not natural, any people under occupation and not to resist this occupation. And this country is a colonial country, it's an apartheid country, it's a kind of a racist, and it's based on racism and based on hatred. So definitely there will be a reaction by the Palestinian, and whether the world would like to accept that or not, well, it's their problem, because by the end of the day, we need to resist this occupation. We need the world to stand with us, but they should look with both eyes, not only with one eye.
Well, we're trying to make the world understand, and you know, there's certain media outlets that do that, and they do highlight the plight of Palestinians. And Moti Abu Musaba, I mean, I'm going to refer to a particular site which I refer to on an almost daily basis, and that's called Palestinian Center, or the Palestine Center for Human Rights. And here's what's interesting. This is a site that cites all the different violations that Israel commits on a daily basis on the occupied lands. I picked a couple to show the depth of the severity of the violations that are taking place. Sunday, August 7th, at approximately 1900 time, an Israeli warplane fired a missile at a horse cart near Al-Samer intersection in central Gaza City, immediately killing two Palestinians that were sitting on a cart. Now, we don't hear about this, do we? Or the world doesn't hear about that. That's just one incident. A violation of right to life and bodily integrity, two Palestinians killed, 16 others, including three children, a person with disability, and a journalist were injured. I could keep going. This is a long list. Daily of violations that take place, killings that take place, etc. Why does this not reach out to the world for there to be a reaction? Because if they were aware of that this is happening, I would think that there should be one.
Yes, I think that the Israeli crimes are flagrant enough to be seen by the whole world. And no one can deny or turn a blind eye towards those flagrant and blatant crimes committed against the Palestinian people. The scenes of the Palestinian children trapped under the rubble of their houses, their residential houses, I think were seen by the whole world. But unfortunately, the whole world stands silent towards those crimes. And I think this reveals how hypocrite the world is when it turns a blind eye towards this crime. On contrary, they are blaming the Palestinian people for practicing their legitimate right of self-defense and of resisting the occupation. While on the other hand, they give the Ukrainian people the legitimate right and the utter right to defend itself against the Russian invasion. And they are encouraging on a daily basis the Ukrainian people to defend itself against the Russian incursions. So we are in front of an abhorrent kind of hypocrisy practiced by the international community. And I think this reveals how fragile the system of human values and the system of human rights organizations and bodies that claim defending human rights and defending the human values. I think if they are serious with this regard, they should give the Palestinian people the needed protection, and to protect the Palestinian children who are being slaughtered under the incursions and the airstrikes of the Israeli F-16 missiles.
Sure. Well, you make a very good point, Saad Nimra. This is something that has been mentioned before, and that is the fact that you have the world, in particular the U.S., leading the PAC, and then the European NATO member countries that are encouraging Ukrainians to stand up, to resist, to arm, to fight against Russia. why that approach is not taking towards Palestinians, especially when it comes to the issue of arms. I mean, for example, why shouldn't the Gaza Strip be equipped with an Iron Dome system? They're the ones that are getting bombed by Israel. Why shouldn't they have an Iron Dome system? But you see where I'm going with this.
Yes, thank you for this question. Yes, you made me, you know, really laugh. It's true what you are saying. If we are going to talk about that the world should take their stand, a real stand, then definitely they should do. If they were standing of the same distance of all things happening around them, around the world. But in reality, they are not. Because here we are talking about Israel. Israel is protected by the Americans, and the interest of Israel, the interest of America, is above everything. It has been said many times, even by the Europeans. The Europeans, they do realize that Israel is a menace country. Israel is an aggression that they are violating all kind of laws, including human laws, international laws, and whatever you think of laws, and they do not do anything about that. To the contrary, they are, you know, supporting Ukraine because the Americans want that. And what the European would say, that our interest with America is more important than the human rights and than the standard that we are standing by, or by the Palestinian rights or anybody else's right, as far as our interests are, you know, safe with the Americans. So they can't, or they don't want to get the Americans angry with them if they criticize Israel or if they take any measures against Israel. And now the issue is not about, you know, whether they are issuing a statement here and there to condemn the Israeli atrocities, but rather to take an action, to do something. Now, my hope, and I think that we believe that we are doing much better in regarding the social media, and people, more and more people around the world, are more convinced of of what's going on and knowing what's going on, more than the governments, more than the parliaments, but I'm talking about the grassroots organizations and people around the world. They do know the right thing because of the social media and the effect of the social media, especially in the last 10 years. So we believe and we hope that this kind of grassroots movement start pressurizing the governments and start making effect on the governments. Maybe one day things will start to change. But meanwhile, we have to maintain our struggle, we have to maintain our resistance, and we have to maintain our stand fasting. At the same time, Israel is maintaining in giving us every day new evidence of their violation and giving the world new evidence that they are violating the human rights and the international law.
Sure. Well, we are looking, last question here, Moti Abu Masabi, at the fact that Palestinians, some, had at least one area that they were pinning their hopes on, even though it was getting dimmer and dimmer, and was getting less in weight by the day, and that was in their politicians, their Arab leaders. But we have seen that the U.S. strategy through the former U.S. presidents was to kill that hope with the so-called normalization that took place. Even though we're seeing cracks in that normalization, one of the headlines reading the UAE and Israel's, well, this one calls it a whirlwind honeymoon, is almost over. Are we looking at any hopes for Palestinians, aside from the leaders, to unite, or for there to be more occurrences? We're not promoting violence here, to stand up like this particular person that carried what it did, and Hamas praised his act. Are we going to see more Palestinians commit these types of acts, given the fact that they're being squeezed from all sides? In less than 30 seconds.
Yes, I think there is no need to state the obvious, that normalization that took place between the Arab regimes and the Israeli occupation is a stab in the back of the Palestinian people. And I think it's the main obstacle that stands between the Palestinian people and retrieving their rights. And I think we are clearly here in front of two camps, the camp of the resistance that still insists on resisting the Israeli occupation and the U.S. interest in the region.
Thank you.
And the camp of the peace.
Thank you for that.
Yes,
I'm sorry, we're fresh out of time.
I do apologize.
Moti Abu Musaba, thank you. Unfortunately,
strategy.
We're fresh out of time. I do apologize. Moti Abu Musaba, political activist, thank you. Saad Nem, professor of political science at Brzezet University. We had a correspondent, Mona Kandil, from Occupied Ramallah at the top of the spotlight. From Mikova Tagwe and the team, it's goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
hello, I am Mitra. An Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Today, I'm going to watch a polo game. Oh God, it would be a new attractive experience.
I've never seen such a game before. Tell you something. What made me decide to have a visit to a polo game today was my recent visit of an art museum in Tehran. There, I saw some stunning antique Persian miniature paintings depicting polo players. Oh, they were amazing. You can't believe it. Well, I have to rush. Not much time left to the beginning of the game. And the traffic is heavy as always. Polo, or Chogan, was formed in Iran around 600 BC and was played during the Achaemenid era. Polo became popular in India during the reign of Darius I. It was also part of the game culture of the Sasanid era. Renowned Iranian poets, including Rudaki, Ferdowsi, Sa'di, Hafez, Nasir Khosrow, and Maulana, have mentioned polo in their poetry several times. Polo flourished during the Safavid era. Historical documents show that Shah Abbas played polo, and even he played polo in Qazvin, the second capital of Iran. In Isfahan, Naqsh-e-Jahan Square was also built for polo. The Europeans became acquainted with the game during the Safavid era and their colonization in India. Okay, here it is. Perfect complex for practicing polo in Tehran. It's big and equipped. And you can't believe how many people have gathered here to watch the game. On my right, the horsemen or the players are coming out of the stable with their horses, preparing for the game. Well, I think this sport is much different from other sports or games because there should be a harmony between one part, which is human, with the other member of the team, which is an animal, a horse. Well, there are two teams in the field. Amazing! I really can't describe the excitement of the game. Some of the spectators are using cameras to watch the game better. I wish I had one. Thank you. Each team consists of four players, each using mallets with long, flexible handles to drive a wooden ball down a grass field. An exciting experience.
Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio.
Coming up is the news.